We welcome you. I must say it's wonderful to be back with you again. I missed you all so much the month of January while I was in Chicago for school, so I welcome you, and I'm glad to be here. I'm joined today by Anya Johnston, our new interim minister, which we truly welcome and are happy to have you here. Hal Walker, our director of music education, and Colleen, our religious education coordinator. I'm happy to have all of you here today, and if any of you are here visiting us for the first time, we would ask you to fill out a green card and then drop it in the office. That wasn't even planned, see? I like that. But anyway, drop it in the offering basket, and you can put any questions that you might have. And also, for those of you who have care or concern, fill out one of our yellow cards, and that will be collected during our opening hymn. The word courage comes from the Latin, which means heart. Per poet Mark Nepo, the original use of the word courage meant to stand by one's core, a striking concept that reinforces the belief found in almost all traditions, that living from the center of our identity is what enables us to face whatever life has to offer.
To encourage means to hearten, to impart strength and confidence. This is our work as a religious community, to encourage one another, to be bold in engaging the world around us, as well as what scares us internally, to give one another the confidence and heart to live as fully as possible.
Your life matters. Most of us as Unitarian Universalists are here because we felt welcome here. At last, a place that we could call home. Some of us were too agnostic somewhere else. Some of us weren't vindictive enough somewhere else. We were too working class somewhere else. We were too lesbian somewhere else. We were too nerdy somewhere else, too introverted somewhere else, etc., etc. Many of us are here because the faith and the people in it affirmed, you may not be perfect, but your life matters just the same. Right now, as Unitarian Universalists, we are being called to act. We are being called by our ancestors, by those who demanded that we help slavery, that we fight for suffrage, that we join the struggle to end Jim Crow, that we listen to and honor Black Power. Linda Maria Child, William Lloyd Garrison, Lucy Stone, Fannie B. Williams, Frances Ellen Harper are calling us. Guided by that enduring, unfulfilled promise of the belief in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, ours is a faith that has said, or worked to say to those who have been marginalized, you are a woman and your life matters. You are gay or lesbian and your life matters. You are transgender and your life matters. You are bisexual and your life matters. You have a disability and your life matters. You were not loved as a child and your life matters. You struggle with depression and your life matters. Right now we are being called. Our ancestors, principals, and fellow humans are calling on us to promote, affirm with deeds and words, your life does indeed matter. Please join me as we come and worship together. Our opening hymn will be on page 6, Just As Long As I Have Breath. I'll change it on me. Okay, no problem. What is it, 118?
118, this little light of mine.
All right. Thank you. Please join me in our Unitarian Universalist Covenant, which is written in your order of service. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Today is called Unique Monique. Monique liked school, but something that she didn't like was that everyone had to wear the same colored uniform. The uniforms were brown and blue. Monique didn't want to look like everyone else. She wanted to be different. One day, Monique found a trunk filled with her mother's old clothes. In the trunk, Monique found a big blue hat. "I want to look and be different," said Monique. So the next day, Monique decided to wear the big blue hat to school. Everyone cheered and commented on the hat, everyone including the principal, who told Monique that hats were not allowed and she had to take it off. The next day, when Monique got to school, she noticed that everyone was wearing hats. And the principal told all the children that the hats were not allowed and asked them to take them off. Monique was looking in her mom's trunk that evening and found some big glasses. She thought, these will be perfect to wear to school. The next morning, Monique arrived at school wearing the glasses. Everyone loved Monique's glasses and commented on how great she looked. Again, the principal saw Monique and told her that big glasses were not allowed and she had to take them off. The next day, when Monique arrived at school, everyone was wearing glasses. The principal noticed that children were wearing glasses they didn't need to read by and told them to take them off. Monique searched in her mom's trunk and found something that was different. She found hair barrettes and put them in her hair and went to school. When the children saw Monique, they liked the additions to her hair and they began to cheer. Woo! The next day, when Monique arrived at school, all of the girls had barrettes in their hair. The principal was not happy. The very next day, Monique went to school without a hat, glasses, or even barrettes in her hair. Her teacher asked her to go to the head of the class and talk about the book they had all decided to read. Monique looked out on the class and opened her mouth and smiled. Monique smiled big at the class because she had braces on her teeth. Monique was unique. She was happy to be unique. She realized that no matter what she wears, her individuality will always shine through. What about you? Are you happy to have your individuality shine through? Join me in a prayer at this time. Oh, great spirit known by many names, it is in sorrow that we implore your intercession in helping many gathered here today to begin to deal with our feelings of helplessness, despair, heartbroken and filled with pain over the executive orders that are being issued, lift the veil of hatred, envy, and confusion that clouds our judgment. Give us the clarity needed to remember that the essence of love and light resides in each of us. It is through faith that we have survived the suffering and despair thrust upon us. Strengthen our resolve to work for justice and healing in a land filled with broken people. Help us to find hope amidst our perceived hopelessness. Refresh and restore our spirits with renewed vigor. Give us courage to get up as we fall again. And from my heart to yours, may it be so. Amen. Question I want you to reflect on for the next few minutes is, what is true identity? In Sanskrit, our identity is called nam, that's N-A-M, and nam in its most functional translation means name. It is a label we attach to identity, something or someone. But nam has a much deeper meaning than simply a surface name. Nam penetrates to the core of the being. Nam is the essence of something. Most of us tend to identify with the obvious surface of our lives. Some of us tend to identify with the way we feel at any given moment. Consider the thoughts that float through our head over the course of our day. We have thousands upon thousands of thoughts. I'm happy, I'm discontented, I'm disappointed, I know what's right, I'm not sure I need to do that, I can't do that, I really don't want to eat that cookie, I really want to lose some weight, I'm bored, I have so much to do, I love you, I hate you, I miss you, give me some space, I feel great, I feel lonely, my body aches, I used to look good. Most of us identify with this commotion of emotion that swirls inside our head. We think that is who we are. And it's uneasy, isn't it? It just continues to go on and on and on. Thought after thought after thought, always shifting, changing, sweeping into a new feeling. I'd like to say it's like a ride at a state fair. You know, one of those rides that spins you around and around and around. And you're pressed to the sides and the bottom drops away and you just hang there helplessly in the air whirling. The ancient teachers had a name for that kind of whirling ride of the mind, and they called it citta viritta, which means the turnings of thought. But beyond that, beyond the constant change of our minds, there is sat. And sat is a Sanskrit word meaning the absolute, eternal, unchanging. Sat is the reality of the root of ourselves. Sat is the stillness in the center of our storm. Sat is the stasis of the basis of life. Simply put, sat is truth. Put sat and nam together and you get satnam, which means true identity. For years, I struggled with just what was my identity. I thought if I did everything that I was expected by my parents, by my friends, that I would discover just who I was. And I spent my 20s and early 30s really not knowing my identity, but responding and having a life based upon others' expectations. I found my life to be full of many experiences, but in those quiet moments when I was all alone with my thoughts and feelings, I felt a sense of emptiness and an unconnected to my life and to my world. I was a young father, husband, business leader, but these were all identities that I assumed, but I realized that they were not who I really was. One day I drove to the ocean, found a rock to sit upon, and gazed out into the vast sea that I saw before me. I started to cry for the first time since my dad had died over 10 years before. And I realized that my identity had become tied up in others' expectations. As I gazed out into the sea, I realized that for me, things had to change. I started at that moment to really begin to look at my life, really begin to listen to my inner voice. And as I began to ask the question, who am I? I listened. And for the first time in my life, I connected with that part of ourselves that we keep hidden and seldom connect with. I realized that much of my life I had been living someone else's identity. Since that day, my life's journey has taken me on many paths and many twists and turns. But what has remained constant is my striving to live my life in my identity in an authentic, true manner. Some days I succeed, and some days I have lessons to learn. And so may it be with each of us.
I just have to soak this in for a moment. The legend becomes reality. Or the abstract becomes concrete. We don't know each other yet. And that's pretty exciting. I don't know you, but I've read about you. A lot of you have read about me. I know because my website keeps count, and I'm not tracking you down. It's not mandatory. But not knowing is a lovely place, dear future friends, to begin. So I hope we can use our not knowing wisely and enter this time of discovery with enthusiasm. I'm enthused, and I'm worn out. I wonder why you're here. I wonder a lot of things about you. What brought you in the door today, or what brought you in 1,000 or 2,000 Sundays ago? Wow. That's a long time. I wonder more, though, what brings you joy or what causes fear to rise up in you? And how do you face sadness or deny it? I wonder about your hopes and dreams and how our community can be a good and encouraging place for the variety of people who enter. Now, Sundays are not meant for me to talk about myself, mostly. Everything I say comes through this filter of me, and you will get to know me more from what I do and how I am than by anything I can say, and certainly better than by any labels I can offer. But we'll play with that a little bit. If you ask me questions, anything, I will probably answer, and it may be oblique, especially if it's a question that requires thought or an answer that is meant to encourage thought. You'll know me by my actions in more important ways than the labels that you might apply to me. Having said that, I was born in the year of the rooster. Apparently that's important because we're now entering the year of the rooster again. Apparently I was the happiest baby ever seen, according to my baby book. But I wasn't expected, and nor particularly desired, and the evidence that was written dies off after about 10 days. So any knowledge of how I was welcomed into the world is sparse until my own memory kicked in a couple years later. Not sure I was still happy. But if either or categories are helpful, and that is a way we divide the world, it's fair to say I'm a dove, if the world's divided into hawks and doves, as it once was. I'm liberal if the only other choice is conservative. And then it starts really breaking apart. I'm totally queer, I suppose. There are no simple either-or choices in that realm. I grew up thinking I was supposed to be male, and I played that part pretty well. But I don't identify as female either. Binary either-or choices just fail very quickly for me. When noted that I tend to think outside the box, I realized I didn't know there was a box. I guess that's a confession because I know it can be annoying. But it's useful too. Part of my mission is the wonderful and humbling task of experiencing my life as it is, and passing that experience, as Emerson said, through the fire of thought, and turning it into words to bring back here. That's a pretty cool job. I resist any prescribed or dogmatic texts or anyone telling me what I should be talking about, and I resist well. I like that because this is a time of resistance in our nation. Yay. I will find what I believe I need to talk about and talk about it. But today I'm like a guest visiting for the first time. I found my way in. There may be others in the room like me sitting amongst us for the first time. And I assume every time we gather, that's a possibility. There will be some who are distraught in the room, some who are elated. Some are feeling overwhelmed, others feeling isolated and alone. You need to know that I believe Sunday is for visitors who bring that wholeness and that variety into the room. That belief will return on other days for more explanation. Today, I'm the visitor. I'll focus on that. Next week, I'll be the visitor who came back. And after about 70 more Sundays or so, I'll be the visitor who moves on. My days are numbered, but it's a pretty big number. I'll be here a while. So I was thinking about naming an identity and having to talk about myself, and I remembered that there was one thing my dad got excited about. I must have been a teenager. They were still alive. I lived at home. He got jazzed partly about his newfangled cassette player and then these cassettes he had recorded of some kind of personal growth workshop, which was extraordinary given who he was. But he was excited about it, and he wanted to share the concept with me. And as I remember it, the bottom line was, who you are is where you were when. He loved a construct like that. I listened enough. The idea was that at the age of 10, your life was determined by where you were. And I thought, why, that's awfully unacceptable. I don't know what he liked about the idea. I thought it was way too specific. And when I was 10, the deadly riots in Detroit happened. Three astronauts died while testing the Apollo 1 command module. The Grateful Dead released their debut album, and so did David Bowie. But at the time, the one I was aware of was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And I was busy worrying about my brother in Vietnam, I think starting his second tour, and that was the year of the first national demonstration against the war. It was also the year of the first human heart transplant. And the first season of Star Trek concluded that year. I'm not sure that I was aware of all of those. I'm not sure when I first saw Star Trek or heard The Grateful Dead, but the year was mostly about war. And then sometimes better and worse things happened. The background was war. It didn't define me, although maybe it did in significant ways. I'm a dove. I created my own demonstrations in high school. I created walkouts and sit-ins. Oh, yes, I resist. I think in order to know each other, we really do have to know about our actions and choices, not just our environment and era, though. Any other 10-year-old living in that same moment would have made other choices and done other things. So I dismiss the who you are is where you were when as a great thing, but it's an okay little thing. It makes a point that we collect things as we live. And when I think about how to know each other, I always think of a poem by William Stafford. You may or may not have heard it. It's called A Ritual to Read to Each Other, although I've never heard people read it to each other. This is me reading it to you. If you don't know the kind of person I am, and I don't know the kind of person you are, a pattern that others made may prevail in the world, and following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. For there is many a small betrayal in the mind, a shrug that lets the fragile sequence break, sending with shouts the horrible errors of childhood, storming out to play through the broken dike. And as elephants parade, holding each elephant's tail, but if one wanders, the circus won't find the park. I call it cruel, and maybe the root of all cruelty, to know what occurs but not recognize the fact. And so I appeal to a voice, to something shadowy, a remote, important region in all who talk. Though we could fool each other, we should consider, lest the parade of our mutual life get lost in the dark. For it is important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep. The signals we give, yes or no or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is deep. Ask me why I love ministering, and I might say that I love falling in love. I also love the fire of thought thing. That's cool. Gives my brain something to do, but part of my task is coming here to fall in love with all of you. Now, I give myself that task. They didn't teach me that in school, and many of my colleagues would not agree, I'm sure. Some of you will make that task harder than others. But I am very persistent. And my definition is broad. And a colleague I never met named Edward Frost, wrote a piece called My Word. I think based on this, I would have liked hanging out with Edward. He says, I love those who are angry with me because they care deeply about something they feel I might have hurt. I love those who criticize me because they need something they think I can give. I love wifty people because their minds are usually in a nicer place than where we think we really are. I love shy people because they are more like me really than the blustery and self-assured whom I love because I know how they really feel. I love the know-it-alls because they know they don't know what is really important. I love those who talk too much because I know how much they fear the silence. And I love the quiet ones because they're usually listening. I love those who love me in spite of what they know. Reverend Frost had a very long ministry. He took his experience and ran it through his own fire of thought and created this reminder for me that my self-assigned task is really not all that difficult. There are exceptions in my book for meanness and malice, and I am not required by myself or anything to love everybody. But other than those, my universalist spirit is fierce and strong, and if God is love, then our job is to love. And I can think of a lot worse jobs to have. Now, my particular experience in Unitarian Universalist ministry is quite particular and not universal. Identity and calling collided, and the need that arose in me after 8 years of ministry to face my gender identity clashed with the need of someone in a position of power. That's a tedious story, and what matters today is that I didn't leave ministry. As of now, though, transgender Unitarian Universalist ministers are quite rare, and only one who was raised as a male has successfully worked as a parish minister. Me. Only one. While I have earned the title of Reverend, I mostly think of myself as doing ministry rather than being minister. They're both important. They both help me decide how to behave. While I was exiled from paying work, I created my own street ministry back in Portland, Oregon. I spent a lot of time with people with no homes, no place to go, very little to work with. It told me that I wasn't ready to stop. I just found myself doing it and then looked back and said, look how I'm spending my time. Huh. I may not be able to keep being a Unitarian, but I'm going to have to keep being a minister somehow. Folks on the street had labels for me. Usually it was, hey, Rev, hey, preacher, or the one who always saw me by Powell's bookstore called me Booker. I think about 70% of them saw me as female, And the rest either didn't care or gave no indication or perhaps just alternated, but none of them were particularly uneasy about it. Which brings me to pronouns. We like to ask about pronouns. I have a problem with that. If you ask me about my preferred pronouns, I might just pause and say, "You were brave to hire me. Thank you." Although I've spoiled that now, I probably won't never say that again. The point is, we tend to think that pronouns tell us something, and there's all good intention behind that. But for non-binary people, it doesn't work that easily. For 50 years, I was mostly referred to as he or him, and when I was 12 or when I was 28 or when I was 41, it always felt odd when I heard someone refer to me as he. At those same ages and the rest, I would sometimes be called she, and that felt odd in a different way, the kind of oddness that suggests there's some truth in there somewhere. Yet, when the notion that I might be transgender was actually an unthinkable thought, which was most of my life, I still knew there was something discordant about gendered pronouns. My more direct answer, should you ask, is that I favor not being referred to as male, and ideally I favor gender-free pronouns. I started a crusade to use plural forms, they, them, and theirs, when I was quite young. Grammatically, it's now considered acceptable, but that doesn't mean it always sounds right. I understand. Now, if someone consistently refers to me as male, I'll assume they're trying to make me feel bad. Perhaps they're angry. But when it just happens once in a while, then it just happens once in a while. There's 50 years of maleness in me, and that's part of me. I don't have a need to talk about gender all the time. That's not my main issue. I actually don't think it's the most interesting thing about me, although it's pretty interesting. In my world, I'm neither male nor female, but both, and sort of neither. By the way, if you make it to 50 and you haven't made your own world yet, I recommend it. The world isn't going to comply with you, so you might as well figure out, if it did, this is how I would be treated. It's kind of liberating. Medically, I'm transsexual, a term in appropriate use in that area, because I take hormones. Socially, I'm transgender, because that's the word we came up with that doesn't sound sexual, because that's how the world works. Politically and in other ways, I'm genderqueer, and I do think it's interesting, but I'm not going to stand up here and talk about it all the time. You can ask me anything, and you'll probably get an answer. You won't get a hostile reaction. Now, most importantly, do not expect the same from all transgender people. Some are very affected by the use of pronouns. I'm not. Now you know. Now you have responsibility. Oh, knowledge and responsibility go together. That hints at problems with the labels for identity. If we take all the trans people in town and stuck them in a room and tried to sort them out, there'd be only one word that applies: humans. Beyond that, we are as different as any people. There are moments I wish it was simpler, but mostly I love the variety of humans and the failure of categories. Yay, we beat them again. As we begin our time of discovery about each other, we don't start with nothing. We always begin knowing with some assumptions. I believe you to be a certain way. You believe yourself to be a certain way. And the objective reality is probably a third thing. You can make some assumptions about me that make sense because you know I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister. You can assume I had some elite education. particular to me is that I'm autodidactic, and school simply provided a space and time for me to concentrate. But I left that 90-degree program with 147 degrees, credits, excuse me, that 90-credit program with 147 credits, and the classes weren't enough. The point is, I don't fit in traditional schools either. You can assume that I care a lot about matters of consequence, and we'll figure out what those are as our days continue. The major I created for myself at Star King School for the Ministry was human relational integrity. And that tells you a lot about what matters to me. I might be actually cheerful and optimistic, like they said in my baby book. I like to think of myself as an informed optimist, and that means I have to go to some dark places first pretty often. I'm delighted to be here for 18 months. I have some goals, hopes, and prayers for you and my unknown successor. I have some for me, too. 2 years from now, I hope you and that successor will be settling in for a healthy and happy time together. Most of my organizational focus is in the interest of that outcome. I am not a few things. I am not here to turn everything upside down. That would make me kind of an idiot. My exploration begins with questions like, what's working well and what can work better? Sometimes we bump into something that's not working well at all. But mostly, I ask myself the same questions every day. What is working well and what can work better? When I run into things that need fixing, I won't be timid. But what I always strive to do is be kind. I do believe we do the best we can in any moment, given whatever we have to work with. But I have endless questions for you about who you are and who you want to be collectively. And that tells you more about me. I'm curious and I'm never bored. Something great could happen any minute, so I'm on alert all the time. You don't know when or where. I will question everything until I can describe it to someone else, like someone who wants to be my successor. And I will describe it honestly. When new ideas occur, I'm inclined to start with an inquisitive, well, why not? Instead of a why. I'm almost always huggable, but I won't initiate hugs because. It's an interesting dance, finding a consensual way to hug, so I just gave you permission to send the obvious signals if that's your thing. I'll be available to talk most any time. By appointments are probably best. Dropping by the office is at your own risk. I will be there, and so far, every time I'm there, things just start happening. I just can't get any work done, but other important things happen. So that tells me you more about me than any list of attributes could. Don't think of nouns for me or pronouns or amateur nouns. Try to think of verbs. That would make me happy. Meanwhile, the signals we give, yes or no or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is very, very deep. It's good to be here. Amen.
Enlake, Alaki,
Malaki,
Enlake, Alaki,
Malaki.
Who am I?
Who am I?
I'm a child.
I'm a child.
Living in the world.
Everywhere I go,
everyone I see.
tree is just another part of me emerging.
Emerging.
What if it's true?
What if it's true?
Our benediction today is by Keith Patton. I must live my own way, refusing all that binds. I must know my own mind among all other minds. I must do my own deeds, and in whatever lands, I will know my own hands among all other hands. I must forsake the crowds and walk with lonely fools to seek for my own face in bleak, deserted pools. I must leave worn old roads to walk on hillside grass, to follow my own feet out in the wilderness. May it be so, and go in peace.